Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Burr, and it's time for not a Monday morning podcast, a very special Monday morning podcast. Some of you who listen to this show every week, you know, every once in a while, I'll have a good friend come on, and we'll bullshit, no commercials, no nothing. And this time...
I'm the good friend?
You are the good friend.
I love it.
I like to think that we had a set relationship.
We did.
That was supposed to then evolve into some sort of dinner.
Yeah, we never had the
couples,
dinner.
Yet. I'm still holding out. I'm still holding out hope, staring out the window. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Brill.
Yeah.
We have here Steve Brill, the director of a movie that I was fortunate enough to have a very small part in coming out this weekend, May 2nd, Walk of Shame, starring Elizabeth Banks.
Yes.
And James Marsden, who probably saw in Anchorman 2.
Yes.
How are you? Welcome
to
the program.
You don't have a small part in it, though. There are no small parts.
There's only
small actors. Is that what they say? No, it's
like
yes.
Insecure performance,
of which you are not.
There's cut out of the movie.
There are those. I cut my grandmother out. I swear to God. Well, you weren't there, but my wife's grandmother, who's 90 years old, I put her in at the very end. It was a very cool, touching thing to do, and she's a performer, and she'd never been in a movie. And
so you acted like her dream was going to come true.
We did. We flew her down and, you know, it was like queen for a day and she was really into it. And I haven't told her she's cut out and the movie comes out on Friday.
How are you going to do it?
Well, she was 90. So I was like, so
maybe God will hook me up.
No, absolutely not. But part of me was like, this isn't the most pressing thing. And then all of a sudden it's coming out and she doesn't know.
Oh, because you have to go through the whole, all the promotion things and edit it down and run it in front of test
audiences. No, it's been cut for a while. I should have told her. My wife went up there. She lives in Marin County and I told my wife to tell her and my wife chickened out. So she doesn't know.
But
I got to call
her. Didn't you kind of chicken out? You kind of pawned it off on
her. I totally pawned it off on her. But it's something I got to deal with. Yeah, that's my life.
What are you going to do? You're just going to let the chips fall where they may?
I could, because she sort of lives in her own world up there. She's a dance instructor on a hilltop. It's not going to play up there, but she might have a friend who go, I saw the movie, and where were you?
What if you just deny it? No, you were in there.
I could do that.
You were in there.
I could do that. Oh, my God.
Dude, I could literally see the stress on your face about this.
You know, well, it's happened a lot, and often you do movies and you cut parts that people love. And you tell them, and sometimes you cut entire performances, and it's the director. No one else should do it. The director should man up and do it. And I tend to do it, but in this case, I haven't done it.
What's the worst?
And I have to. I'm sorry. Thank you for having me. You are cut from the movie, Bill.
Okay.
By the way, you are completely cut from the movie.
And this is like a safe way to do it.
This is like breaking
up with somebody in public, like
exactly.
In a restaurant.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
There's a guy here. You're not coming across the table.
What's the? I don't want you. If you don't want to name names, but what's the worst situation that you've had where you had to cut an entire performance? The worst reaction, maybe the first time you had to do it, like. How long did it take you to get the balls up to just call him up and be like, hey, remember that dream you had? remember how I told you how well you were doing in the movie and you're really making this movie and how it's going to do stuff for your career? Well.
Yeah. Oh, my God. See, I'm trying to think of a very particular incident. It happens all the time. It's happened to me as an actor, too. I was an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And many actors you'll talk to will go through the experience of showing up to the premiere almost, or sitting around the TV with their family and going, okay, here I come. And then they skip the part of the narrative where they're supposed to be, and it's like the worst experience. And I've been to a premiere where I was cut out, and the director didn't tell me, but it was a small part. And I vowed never to do that. Of course, now I'm doing it with my grandmother. But I can't remember.
Yeah, but she lives in the woods.
I know, I have cut great scenes from people that I thought that we couldn't keep in the movie, and they were really bummed out about that.
And what it's a great scene; they've done a great job. And it's just the film's too long, the pacing. What is it?
Yeah, it's emotional scenes generally in a comedy. Like I'll usually put a few emotional scenes in that might not have enough jokes or even any jokes. And there's a movie I did called Late Last Night, which is a movie I wrote, and it starred Emilio Estevez and Steven Weber, and it was all about two guys at night. It wasn't dissimilar from this movie, Walk of Shame. It was two guys at one night, L.A., losing their minds, and they had this one critical scene where they sat and they really talked it out. mm-hmm. about three quarters of the way through the movie. And one guy talked about sort of, you know, where all his problems come from. And there was a mention of a girlfriend dying of AIDS. And there was a whole monologue story.
Sounds like but it was actually, up for an award.
I
there.
Know. It
that
was,
sounds
it was,
pretty good.
And it was a long tracking shot through a sand in the bunker. They were in a golf course at night. And it was sort of telling everything I thought I wanted to write the movie about, which is often a mistake, is when you have people talk about it. And well performed. Emilio cried. And we were all like so proud of ourselves afterwards. And then we just started, I cut it into the movie. And it was just like, okay, here comes that scene, everybody.
And it just the dragged. Test audience didn't like it.
Test audiences, anybody who saw it was like, okay, well played, but actually sticks out as being a little, not pretentious, but unnecessary and overstating the themes of the movie, obviously. And
did
it
you
was
fight,
better without.
Did you fight for the scene or you just.
No, I was the only one who. It was my movie. I didn't have a lot of pressure on me. Right. So I cut it myself and then told them, and they were. It was an actor's moment. And certainly when you send the script, a lot of actors get very attracted to certain scenes in movies. I don't know right. if you get that, and you're like, that's why I'm
I
doing
haven't
this
done
movie.
A lot of movies. I get yeah. attracted to the fact that I'm actually in one.
That you're in one? That there's a plane ticket
yeah,
for you?
Just happy to be there.
I'm going to New Orleans.
Yeah, I'll fly myself there. Absolutely.
Well, as it moves along, you'll read a script, and you'll be like, oh, that moment, that's a good one. And then often, sometimes you don't even shoot that moment, or it gets co-opted, or a director will go, that line, yeah, I think the other guy should say that, and then you'll take that one. That happens a lot. Like, just certain right. moments or beats get switched sometimes, and you just have to roll with it, just like being cut. And I since I feel I've been cut, and I sort of live in the reality, I've been at the business a long time, so I'm pretty pragmatic about Hollywood, and that's, I don't even tell my parents until jobs are almost shooting, you know, because things fall apart. So yeah. much out here, and
that's why I don't say shit
exactly
until like yeah. I started promoting this movie like 2 weeks ago, yeah. and I'm sitting.
I know.
And even then, I'm still thinking right. like, well, I'm trying to think. I was trying to think of a way that you could cut me out, and I came up with three different ways yeah. that you could do it. So I was just like going, I don't want to be that guy,
yeah,
because you know I already get trashed enough on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Just me trying to read out loud and stuff. I give them plenty of material on my own. The last thing I need to do is. Say that I'm in a movie that I'm not in.
Oh, my
God.
Let
me ask you this, because I've always wondered this. If the actor gets cut out,
yeah.
can he still get the footage for his reel?
That often happens, and I like to say yes, and then I'm never able to do it. So it's a double whammy. Because I'm like, well, because generally I don't own the footage, and the studio will be like, why would you want, unless it's a pure outtake, that often we can put the outtakes on the DVD of a scene which happened that saved us on a few incidents where, you know, we'd put the as extra scenes.
Right.
So the you'd always be able to put it on, but often people would want their stuff and I wasn't allowed to release it. So
dude, I know a guy who he had like five scenes with Al Pacino in a movie.
Well, yeah, what movie? Do you know?
I don't know the movie, but I saw the pain in his eyes that I knew it was a real story.
Yeah.
And he told everybody and they showed up.
Oh,
dude,
yeah.
It was one of those stories he's telling me and I'm just like going, oh my God, bail, take an exit. And he just he rode the wave to the beach and they cut the entire storyline.
Oh, yeah.
It just was when they went to go pick put it. Like, I don't know how you guys do I have such fucking ADD. Like, that's why stand-up is perfect for me.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I have an idea. And I talk about it for 90 seconds. Right. And I'm like, oh, look at that light that just came on. And then I go over there. I've tried to write scripts, and it goes well to about page 30.
Yeah.
And it starts spinning out of control, and I go into denial.
Yeah.
And I'll get to about page 50, and I'm just like, oh, this is just it's like a giant pizza dough that just spins out of control. And I'm just like, fuck it.
And it's a virtual wall you hit, and you back away from it.
And then Jesus shows up, and he kills everybody except for the hero. And the end.
Page 60.
Yeah.
Not a script. Yeah, it's so capricious. Is that the word? The movie business? Things are...
You know, I was going to say capricious.
You were, weren't you?
It was right on the tip of my tongue, but I like to
capricious?
Let my...
Capricious?
I like to let
extra
my guests
pretentious?
Speak.
Yes, it's so capricious. Stories. I've been around a lot of actors, too, and there is a story. I'll tell this story because no one knows this story. It's so crazy about what can happen to you as an actor. Is this the Actors Podcast, by the way?
Believe me. If people are not into this so far, we're going to talk about the movie, and then we'll get on to sports.
Oh, we'll go to sports, yeah.
I would say, out of all the directors in Hollywood, you have the best throwing arm.
Oh, thank you.
Dude, it was insane. Remember that day we were throwing the football around?
Yeah.
We were doing something. It had a helicopter or something.
Yeah.
That whole scene.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, I'm going to throw, you know, and no offense, but, you know, you're sitting there in your director's chair with your beret on. I'm like, this guy can't throw a ball. Like, so, guy's throwing it all over. He's
that
like,
was
yeah.
a yarmulke, Bill.
Oh, that wasn't
a beret. Yeah, thanks.
Well, I'm new to Hollywood.
Yeah. Why? Of course it's a yarmulke.
Was it a pink one, too, for breast cancer? How many levels did I offend people?
A pink yarmulke. I can't believe it. A beret.
Is it bad that I call it a little hat?
No. No. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah, it's
Yamakai. Yeah. I forget what I call
Yamakai.
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 Yeah, it's great if you're balding.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Although
they
you run
it.
Out of places to clip it onto, don't you?
They do. I don't. They tape it. I don't know. I got nothing on yarmulkes. I mean, I.
All right. Well, tell us about this movie. It comes out May 2nd, which is this Friday.
Yeah, this Friday. Okay, so this movie comes out on. It's this new thing they do with movies where you can actually buy it on iTunes, too, the same day it comes out. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. VOD day and date. So
I think that's really smart because people basically have movie theaters in their homes now with the surround sound.
That is what's happened. And there's certain movies have caught the idea that it's
good. Dude, that's a phenomenal idea because you don't have to deal with people talking. And if they are talking, you're the man of the house. You tell them to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about getting your jaw broken.
Right. And if you watch it alone, you can, schizophrenically tell yourself, shut the fuck up.
I love it.
So it comes out. It gives you the option of seeing it in theaters if you like the theater experience. And then
I love the theater. These sticky floors.
Yeah. You can go and but look, I mean, you got to ask yourself, why are movies getting so big and crazy, and why is it all special effects and
3D
event?
And all
3D
that.
It is because they have got to get people away from their 60 inches,
right?
Which is really what it is now. You can buy a 60 inch TV for $3,000 or something, a great one, and people are not going to leave their house and go through the whole thing unless it's they don't think they can get that experience. So to that end, movies like
Walk
ours,
of Shame,
Walk
is
of
in
Shame,
3D.
Is not in 3D.
Damn it!
It has cinematic touches that you really want to, appreciate in the cinema. But seeing it at home is not a bad way to do it either. So, but you have the choice. It comes out May 2nd in theaters and VOD, and it's the new model.
I had such a great time on that. I got to work with Ethan Suplee, who
best.
I never met before. People might know him from
American History X.
American History X. The White Man Marches On, he sang that song.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to sing that to my black friends when they didn't pick up their phone in the 90s. I would sing that into their answer machines.
Suplee, who was...
No, what was he? My Name is Earl.
Yeah, My Name is Earl.
My Name
and,
is...
And he was just in Wolf of Wall Street. We saw him in that.
Wolf of Wall Street, he was great in that.
Yeah, he's the best. I think he's like... He's not underrated. People know who he is and stuff, but I think he's the funniest. I used him in this movie called Without a Paddle like 10 years ago when we went to New Zealand, and I hung out with him for months there, and he was just the best and the funniest.
Oh, he told me that great scene where he didn't want to point the gun at somebody. You guys had this epic screaming match at each other in some forest in the middle of New Zealand.
Yeah, that's true. He's also very peculiar, as actors can be. Even though he's very sort of straightforward and easy to deal with, he decided his character, he decided his character had changed through, he was a bad guy. He thought his character had gone through an arc where he had actually internally changed his feelings towards the guy he was chasing and had ambivalence about shooting him.
Uh-huh.
So he wouldn't point the gun at him at the end. The last scene, he literally wouldn't raise the gun up. He had it tipped down, sort of at his crotch. And, I was like, Ethan, gun up. I thought he was just being lazy. And he goes, I can't, man. I go, what are you talking about? You got to train your weapon on these guys.
And you're like in the bush.
We're in the middle of the woods in New Zealand where you can only access it by helicopter. Burt Reynolds is there. It's a crazy, surreal scene. And he's decided his character's gone through some sort of character arc where he's nonviolent to the point of would let him run away. And that was not in the script and that was not intended. But if you do see the movie, he won because he just would not tip his weapon up and I gave up on him.
Yeah, he said you edited in a completely different gun.
Oh, my God, that's true. Yeah, which is the director's. That's right. I remember looking at it, and I see it as a game. So I was like, okay, buddy, you want to do that? So I think I got Commando or some Schwarzenegger movie and found a close-up of a gun that matched his gun and did a close-up of it being cocked and loaded and then did a close-up of his face so it looked like he was ready to kill these people.
But what I loved about that story is it seemed like you guys argued so bad and then you guys were total friends on the set. So I looked at it like when Tom Brady yells at his offensive coordinator and then the end of the game, you're like, you're still friends in that type of thing.
Yeah, I think I do operate on an aggressive sort of Let's work it
how
out.
How did you do this this year? I remember when we were filming that, the Super Bowl was going on.
Yeah, while we were shooting.
Yeah, you had some, you know, you'll throw a little money down,
I will, yeah. I lost that Super Bowl. I know that. I had Baltimore, right?
Second half.
Oh, this
I had the Ravens.
Year?
I actually picked the Ravens last year. How'd you do this year?
Overall?
Yeah.
A loser. I mean, anyone who says they win is a liar.
Wow, but, an honest gambler.
I love it. No, I was overall a loser in football. What was the Super Bowl? Seattle. I had Broncos.
Seattle.
Who's going to bet against Peyton?
Me.
I mean,
I won some money on that.
As a gambler, of course. I don't know. Why did you hate Peyton? Or?
No, I just felt that Seattle had that kind of defense that pisses him off.
Yeah.
That where he gets frustrated.
Right.
Where they're really physical with his receivers. Basically, the whole thing that caused him and Jim Irsay to make that tape against the Patriots.
Right.
I know a bunch of Colt fans are rolling their eyes, but that's what the fuck happened.
Yeah.
So I felt like if they stopped him enough early on, he would get frustrated.
Right.
But none of that even happened.
No.
They just snapped the ball over his head.
And
the wheels fell off all over the place. So I don't put like that loss, you know, on him. It was just like, I just think the first play went so bad, and then the pressure of the game, because Seattle wasn't that much better than the Broncos. I definitely think that they were the better team that day. But that was – remember in the 80s when there was just like three Super Bowls in a row where it was just an absolute blowout? It started as a game, and then one team got up
Broncos
by –
Broncos over San Diego. I mean, Niners over San Diego. That run in there.
That's 90 – no, I was talking more like I would say
Cincinnati.
No, Raiders destroying the Redskins. 49ers came back against Dolphins, and Bears destroying the Patriots.
Yeah.
Giants destroying the Broncos. Redskins destroying the Broncos. Then the 49ers Bengals was a good one.
Right.
And then you went into the Buffalo years. It was just really
Buffalo was terrible. They got good.
Yeah, it was kind of like, it was wild. It was really like Globetrotters, Washington Generals for like almost like a decade.
Yeah.
And I remember like, players from other sports, somebody big in another sports was like, why would you even watch it? It's like a blowout every year.
Yeah,
and
it was.
And it was like literally 8 out of the 10 years, it was like 44 to 10, 56 to 3.
I think the first one was the St. Louis where he tackled him on the two, Tennessee, St. Louis.
Started a run.
I'm sorry.
Started
a
run.
Is that the game London Fletcher got him on the two?
Yep, that was 99. And then
that started a run where all of a sudden the Super Bowl was awesome.
Yeah, 2000, Ravens dominated the Giants. And then all the Patriots ones were close.
And then the fucking best was Broncos, Packers. That one.
Oh, yeah.
I was at that one. That was great.
That was down in San Diego,
Yeah,
right?
I was in San Diego.
I remember thinking about going to that game, and I was watching the game, and when Elway dove headfirst and helicoptered around, I said to my friend, if they win this game, that is in every highlight reel of Super Bowls and when they do the John Elway. That was the greatest.
Yeah, I was right there for that. I was literally right there, second row from the top of the stadium. I was literally so far away.
That shithole stadium.
Oh,
I actually like that stadium, but it's a dump.
I guess. I mean, you know, it is. It is, right?
I've seen a lot.
I used to work at how many Super Bowls have you been to? Let's go there.
I've only been to two. I went to when the
Patriots. Patriots versus when Brady fucking. No, and it bled so. New Orleans? Which one?
You're right. That was what you just said was exactly what I was going to say. Fucking Bledsoe lost because that fucking asshole Parcells said fucking sold his house, that baby.
Yep.
Yeah, you want me to eat the fucking dinner? You cooked the meal. You got to let me buy the groceries. What? That was one of the most self-centered fucking things.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, you don't get along with the owner, so fuck the whole team.
Yep. I know, right?
And he was a good enough coach and had a good enough team where, you know, we were in it until, first half we were still in it despite that bullshit. Then there was the return that Michigan kid ran it back. And that was at end zone seats, and he was running right at us. And then the next one, the next one that I went to was, when we beat the Rams.
Yeah.
Yep. And when they kicked the field goal, I was on the opposite. And they kicked it
the other way.
I you know, that's the kind of hookup I have. I have upper deck end zone seats. But I went to them. And I ended up when we played the next Super Bowl after that, who the fuck did we play after that? It was either the Eagles it was the Panthers.
The Super Bowl, yeah.
The Panthers. And I had an opportunity to go, but then I got called in to do the Chappelle show, World Series of Dice for fans of the show.
Yeah.
That was taped like the day before Super Bowl Sunday or the day after. Like I couldn't make it. And I remember being upset that I wasn't able to go, but psyched because I got acting work.
Right.
And then the second the game was over, even though we won, the fact that I still had like $2,000 in my pocket and didn't have to go to the airport, it's just like, you know what? That's kind of cool. And it's never going to be better than watching the Patriots win their first one ever, being that big of an underdog. So I haven't gone since. Plus, you know, I do the road all the time. I'm always going to the fucking airport. So it takes a lot.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm an old man, man.
Yeah, me too.
It takes a lot to get me
too.
Out of
I used to work at the Orange Bowl as a kid. I grew up in Miami, sort of, and I worked as a hot dog salesman at the Orange Bowl during the Dolphins. I would go to the Dolphins game, the perfect season. I was there for that.
No way.
72, yeah, I was like 8 years old. But my
Mercury Morris.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Kick, Larry Let's Zonka, Larry going. Little, Jake Larry Little. Scott.
Whoa! Keep going.
I named an offensive guard there.
That is pretty good. Norm
Jake
Evans.
Scott. Nick Bonacani, of course.
Bonacani.
Who else? Oh, Paul Warfield.
Yes.
Gary O, your premium.
Very impressive. Gary O. Gary O. Yeah.
Bob Greasy, of course.
Bill Stanfill. The 8-4, remember the defense?
I know the name, but...
Stanfill, Bonacani.
I know all of that just from watching NFL films.
Swift,
and Twilly, football cars.
Marlon Briscoe. And the thing people forget, which I'm glad on some sort of form I get to bring up, is that I was there at the injury. It was a San Diego when Greasy got knocked out. People forget Greasy got knocked out in the third game of the season, and Earl Morrill took them all the way to the playoffs, and then Greasy came in and closed the deal.
And he always Earl Morrill gets remembered for Super Bowl III.
Yeah.
More than he does for, what was that, Super Bowl VI?
That one?
Seven, eight.
I don't know what number it was, yeah.
I could actually sit there and Rain Man it and figure it out.
I know.
I could sit here and go
Remember
Green Bay. Green Bay, Jets, Chiefs, Colts, Cowboys, Miami.
Cowboys, Miami.
Seven or eight.
Wow, very good.
That's all I did.
14-7, Dolphins lost in 71.
Should have been 14-0.
Because Mike Bass ran back the Gary Premian.
There you go.
Oh, God. No, so I grew up with that, and then I sold hot dogs there, and then I sold hot dogs at the Super Bowl in 78 there. That was my first one. And then
78, not 79. Steelers, Cowboys.
Yeah, Steelers, Cowboys.
You were at that game?
Of course, I was selling hot dogs. I was
That's
14.
The Super
By
Bowl
the way,
ever.
Oh yeah, I
Unless
was there.
You're a Cowboys fan, but I was
no,
a Cowboys
I was
fan.
A
was still
football
great.
Fan, and I was there selling hot dogs, and it was totally unregulated. It
What's
was
that guy's name? Bless his heart, he's got to be the sickest man in the building. The guy
Swan?
Jackie, the guy who dropped the ball.
Oh, I don't know.
He played for the Cardinals. He had the surest hands in the business, and then he was so fucking wide open, he had time to think about it, and he threw it at him, and he just dropped it.
I was stoned selling hot dogs. We used to get there. It was so unregulated. There was no, it was in such a bad part of town. And they would let everyone in and you'd have to buy your hot dogs. And I was 15 or something. I wasn't supposed to be working there. And we'd get stoned and just walk around selling hot dogs and getting high. And then I remember I sold a hot dog to Edward Kennedy at that game. I thought that was the coolest thing. Ted Kennedy was there. I remember I sold him a hot dog.
You were at Super Bowl 13.
Yeah.
You were stoned.
Yeah.
You were selling hot dogs and you sold one to one of the Kennedys.
That's right. That's pretty cool, right?
And you people aren't going to go see Walk of Shame this Friday?
Come on.
What
That's
more do you
pedigree.
Need?
That's the best. Yeah.
So how did you end up playing catch with Dan Marino in New York City late at night?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no. So Marino, I met through a golf tournament.
Through Bobby Kennedy.
Bobby Kennedy. Sergeant Shriver.
We were down in Scituate, the Irish Riviera.
Sergeant Shriver. Remember that actor? Sorry, that's a horrible way to start because he's still around and still works. D.B. Sweeney. Remember D.B. Sweeney?
I remember the name,
Okay, D.B. Sweeney.
I know athletes. I'm not good with that actor. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., of course.
He was great.
He was a kicker for
play
the
for?
Falcons.
No. Yeah. He was anyway, I got to meet Dan and Danny down in Miami through this tournament while he played, and we became friends. I don't know why. It made very little sense to me that we became friends.
Because you're fucking hilarious.
Oh, good. There it is. And we played golf.
And you sold hot dogs at Super Bowl
13. And I sold hot dogs at Super Bowl 13. And I couldn't be a bigger Dolphins fan. And meeting Marino, I was definitely a fanboy. But he let it go, and we sort of became friends. And I would go down and play the tournament, and we became friends. And then he's in this movie, Little Nicky, I did.
Uh-huh.
So we called him, me and Sandler, who loved him too.
How do you not love Dan Marino?
He's the best.
I kind of think he's the best.
Yeah, you love him.
Yeah.
I got to hook you guys up.
Dude, he had nobody.
I know.
He had nobody.
I know.
And God bless Don Shula, I feel like everybody had caught up to him. And he was, I just, you know, the guy had no fucking running game. You ever look at his running backs during the time?
No.
I've said this.
By the way, I have to admit one horrible thing.
Delvin Williams, Tony Nathan, yeah. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It was a one-headed monster. Literally, yeah.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys had like basketball player names.
Oh, my God.
You know, Robert Parrish.
Oh. Kevin McHale. It's so horrible to admit, but I have to be honest because that's what this is all about, right, Bill? Right. I shouldn't lie.
No.
Yeah,
it's Hollywood. I'm a big phony, dude.
I should be completely phony.
I had you on here for me.
Oh,
has
good.
Nothing to do
right.
with it. I just wanted to say how great I was in the movie.
Yeah, you were really good.
you're cut out.
This is terrible that I went to college and I wore a beret, metaphorically and maybe even real, right in the middle of Marino's heyday. I was in college, and I wasn't a total, like, sports are stupid guy. But part of me, I don't know what
you
happened.
You would be you.
I was
you
a BU.
Film,
and I was a film guy, and I lived 100 yards from Fenway Park, and I never went.
You never did?
I was into football. I mean, I was into film and foreign movies, and I was such a, what word could I say?
Douche.
I was a douche.
You were. You had the beret.
No, but
you were young. You were young.
I was young, but I was an athlete growing up, and something changed.
Did you smoke the cigarette?
I smoked Chatan. I talked. I used my hands when I talked. I cared about movies, and I was in the middle of Boston in 1984, and I didn't go. Ugh. And then I got out of college, and I came back. But in Marino, I was aware of, and I watched him. I liked him in college, too. I was aware of him then, and that whole draft. Did you see that documentary on the draft?
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
I just watched it again the other
day.
That's
great. You know what I saw today? The one that drove me up the wall. They did a 30 for 30 on the Detroit Pistons.
Oh, yeah, the Bad Boys. Yeah.
Dude, it's so fucking funny watching that. Like, I mean, obviously take all this with a grain of salt because I am a Celtics fan.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just a bunch of old men talking shit. It's just I find people who actually did shit on those 30s for 30s are very reserved.
Yeah.
Like a Bobby Orr,
right.
Larry Bird, other Boston guys.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm just naming other like Jordan, you don't hear even though he is a shit talker, you don't hear him like these guys were just like the funniest thing was with filthy players talk about like what they do, how the way they frame it. They're like, you know, I always tried to get like you know, I was going to win the mental game. I was going to win. And then they, like, cut to Lambert, like, throwing an elbow in somebody's face as they're in the air coming down the lane.
It's
just
so
like,
funny.
And Lambert kept going, you know, somebody had to wear the black hat, you know? Somebody had to wear. It's like, no, you really didn't. You didn't. You could have gone out there and just played the game and see if you could win playing the game. And
the enforcer mentality.
Like, and Isaiah was doing you know, when they were called thugs, Isaiah was kind of going, you know, when people, he has these long pauses, you know, use stereotype against you. You can choose to either fight it or embrace it. It's like, dude, there's no stereotype there. That's what you guys were doing. You were beating the shit out of people. You took basically the Flyers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
the Broad Street.
Yeah,
police.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah,
we can't beat you, so we're just going to beat the shit out of you, and then we're going to act like we're playing chess.
I know.
Dude, you just broke my nose. I'm in your head, man. I'm in your head. I really think what sums that fucking team up, and I'm not talking about Rick Mahorn, because that guy was seriously, I would not, I mean, obviously I wouldn't fuck with anyone, but that guy like was the real deal.
Yeah.
But the rest of them, dude, when the Bulls beat him and they didn't shake their hands, they just came off like a bunch of punks.
Oh, yeah. They were punky.
That was terrible. And people will talk about
Vinny Johnson, though.
We'll talk about Belichick walking off at the end of the Super Bowl when we were undefeated and then we weren't.
Yeah.
That was also the same thing. That was embarrassing as a Patriots fan to watch. That was terrible. Be a fucking man. Walk across.
Yeah.
They beat you.
Yeah.
Hey, congratulations. You were better. And then you walk away. Hey, you fucking cunt. You know, that's what you do. But I don't know. It just that reminded me of the University of Miami one. Where
that was brutal.
Where they're just going like, you know, the whole country was afraid of us. And I was like, dude, I was in a professional football city. I don't even remember. I remember hearing you guys were doing things, but
I
wasn't sitting by my phone shivering.
I know.
It's a football team.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Sorry,
I
just went off on a rant. So we were talking about you and Dan Marino.
No, that's funny, the enforcers. How they'll say it's a mental game.
Yeah, it's trying to get a mental edge.
It's like, oh, really? So Bob Probert and McSorley had that little mental edge where they were just like hit you with a stick over the head.
No, but Probert
was good. That's not the right one.
Yeah, he's the wrong guy.
Did Probert die, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they all died. One time, I know we can tell sports stories, and I got to remember all the names. I played in this hockey tournament because I wrote those Mighty Ducks movies. Those
I didn't know you played. I play.
Yeah. Well, let's you know, I created I'll, that
I'll
hockey team.
You cut me out, I'll get the mental edge of you out on the ice.
I am dirty. My favorite player is Kenny Linsman, so don't fuck with me. The
Kenny
rat.
Linsman.
I'll fucking hook you in ways you didn't even know you could be hooked in, yeah.
But that guy, I don't consider was like a dirty player.
Ah,
like,
that's awesome. But like, you think that he was so dirty.
But
chippy dirty.
But chippy dirty. There's chippy
Gino
dirty.
Cicerelli,
and then there's
Linsman, yeah.
But then there's blow your knee out, end your career,
yeah,
concussion
well, who's
guy.
That really? Like
Matt Cook.
Oh.
As he calls it, finishing his checks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or fucking Hunter.
Oh, Dale yeah, Hunter. Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy should have gone out on the ice with a sickle. That guy was like literally like a sociopath. And like when he would do shit.
Yeah.
What was the scariest thing about him right. is when you looked at him when he was in the penalty box, there wasn't an ounce of remorse.
No, no.
Like, but the comfort that I take with a lot yeah. of those guys, because they have that, you know, look, I did what I had to
right.
do, that Bill Romanowski kind of thing.
Yeah, oh,
and
yeah.
And all you
one.
Do
yeah.
is you just like, thank God they're not working in a corporation that has some stuff that they need
know.
To get rid of.
Cause yeah, it would, exactly.
Because those guys would, with yeah. their hockey helmet on, would yeah. pour it into the drinking water.
Of course.
I'm going a little big here, but like
no,
that's,
no, it's yeah, it's like the,
I find it frightening.
Yeah.
So, anyways, you're in New York City with Dan Marino. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning. Somehow you have a football.
Yeah, after a Knicks game, got to toss it around in the street. He had just retired and he wanted to chuck it. He's the best guy because he's like, I want to throw, I want to chuck it, or you know,
yeah,
say I sling it. He just likes throwing. I love throwing too. There's no better feeling. And yeah, after a Knicks game,
so you
just
guys
outside the region, the hotel in. Whatever, on Upper East Side, took us 64th Street or something like that.
And there's nobody really on the streets,
no.
and Dan Marino was out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just he throwing says. Balls that look like probably
yeah.
like a punt, and
yeah.
you're running underneath
oh,
these things.
Well,
dress shoes or sneakers?
Sneakers. But, yeah, there's nothing like a pro athlete throwing ball. It's just so different. I mean, I can throw a spiral in something, but it's like just that soup. And then right in your hand, so great.
Oh, it's literally cutting through the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Have you? You've been out on the sideline and stuff. You see the difference.
I've sat close enough to the game. Look, dude, I'll go to like a Division III college football game, and you can blow me away with my athletic abilities. But like, I did something earlier this year for Inside the NFL at the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
not to
I saw
start
that.
Talking about my IMDb page here, but. I saw I'm not good with, you know, I know all the old guys. I don't
yeah.
know all the young guys. Who's the amazing athlete from Dez Bryant?
Yeah.
I saw him. They were just basically doing, like, some walkthrough practice. You know, it's the
right.
Pro Bowl, so, you know, they're
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
joking
yeah.
around stuff. And he was playing catch with somebody.
Yeah.
And, dude, first of all, the guy's, like, physique was, like,
yeah.
I couldn't draw a guy in better shape.
Dez Bryant, yeah.
He looked like a superhero, right?
Yeah.
And they're throwing the ball to him, and he was kind of letting it almost go past him.
Yeah.
And then he was just reaching out and catching it.
Yeah.
The way I would, like, a balloon.
Right.
That was floating very
yeah.
slowly.
Yeah, yeah,
he
yeah.
was catching a,
yeah.
like, three-quarter speed football.
Yeah.
He would catch it, and then he did this thing that almost looked like a butterfly knife where
right.
he would flip it around,
right.
and it would be in the throwing position.
Yeah.
It would go around the back of his hand,
gotcha.
And back to his front of his
yeah.
hand, and in the same motion, he was bringing it back
right.
and would zip it back. To this
Dez
little,
could
this
throw
little
it too.
Bald
yeah.
white guy
right.
coach
right.
who would, you know, you saw the pain every time
yeah.
he caught
I know.
Dez's catch, and I
Mind
just
you,
saw that.
These
like,
guys, they have big hands. But that's one thing I must say. I go, they're great athletes and stuff, but when you have huge mitts and you've shook in these guys' hands,
right.
that helps. I don't have big hands. I'm not saying I could have been a pro, but
I think it's the only thing that stopped you.
This is like
I read your
this
scouting
is Raging
report.
Bull, Raging Bull. I think this is what it was. He goes, I had hands like a little girl or a baby or something. That's why I could never be a heavyweight fighter. But my hands have totally kept me back in many ways. They're not huge. They're
at what age did they stop growing?
They stopped growing when I stopped growing, you know, at about 20. But whatever. It makes a difference. I mean, hockey, too. You ever play, like, you know, someone who has big hands, they hold the stick, you can feel and put. I don't. had the leverage that if only I had big kids.
I was a big kid the first, right up until about fourth grade.
Right.
Like I was supposed to be born June 10th, 1968.
Right.
I was born June 10th, 1974. I was like, no, I came out, dude.
Yeah.
I was like a 10-pound baby.
Oh,
there's not,
yeah.
There's not one cute picture of me.
Oh, my God. This
my
Irish
head was
baby.
This same yeah. size, right. giant white head. I looked like I should have been walking through a little city just knocking shit down.
God.
So I rode that baby fat till about fifth grade.
Right.
Plus, I stayed back in first grade, so I had an extra year on people. Then around sixth grade, there was always that kid who caught puberty.
Yeah.
You know, a couple, two or three, and all of a sudden, guys are getting, like, peach fuzz in the eighth grade. And, like, I was a late bloomer. And then after that, I was like, I better start being more funnier. And, so I was never a force to be reckoned with after fourth or fifth grade. Once the Nerf football was out of the game, it's like when they took away the red line. I was just too slow for the whole fucking thing. So
did you start skating at a young age? Was that your thing then?
No, I actually didn't take the game up, like getting pads and actually really trying to get good at it until I moved out here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, you got to come up from a hockey family.
Yeah.
You're going to get up at 4 in the morning for 4:30 a.m. ice time.
Yeah.
Cutting up orange slices and shit, whatever the fuck it is they do. And my family was Midwest people that moved to.
Oh.
So they were more, you know, baseball, football.
Yeah.
Not even like basketball. They were just baseball, football.
Yeah.
So.
So you play hockey out here now?
We had a great group of guys, like comics, that were playing.
Oh, yeah.
And. And I was the guy organizing the game. I got a little busy on the road. Then somebody else took it over. And you know what happened was a bunch of people heard about it. And at first, it started off, it was fucking like Bad News Bears.
Right.
Like, I was out there, I had a helmet, gloves, skates, that's it.
Right.
And like I was falling on the ice, like getting bruised so bad they weren't showing up for like 3 days. I'd be in the shower and all of a sudden it looked like somebody caned the back of my fucking thigh. And so then I started like, you know, I bought all this stuff.
Right.
And then everybody was all suited up. And what happened was, all of a sudden, these rink rats started showing up. And the game sped up.
Yeah.
And everybody who sucked stopped coming.
Right.
Saying it wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah, it's not.
And I was the only guy. I stuck it out. Yeah. And I went from being upper level shitty
to
immediately, like, the worst.
Yeah.
Why are you even? I mean, I look literally like a fan that ran out on the ice. Like, that's how much slower I was. But I did learn to change direction pretty quickly, because every time when I would finally catch up with everybody, it would be going the other way. So I learned how to stop on both sides. I burned a lot of calories.
That's the best. Well, there is nothing more fun than, even if you're bad at hockey, because I played it as a kid and then moved out here in 86 or something, and then the Gretzky got traded down here, and I became a hockey fan again,
because
we would go to the games and hang out. We had nothing else to do. We'd go to the games. And then I remembered I used to skate as a kid, and I loved it, and I lived in Culver City, and there was a skating rink literally a mile away, and I lived with this.
That's closing down, you know.
I know. That sucks. That was my place. I lived with this guy, Pete Berg, this director, actor.
Yeah, I know.
Him and I lived together, and we used to go.
You just did that Wahlberg movie, right?
Yeah, Lone Survivor.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, we were loser, nothing to do, and we'd just go to the skating rink and skate around in circles all day, because he was from New York, and we used to play Pee Wee, and it was like fucking, what's that movie where they skated around, walked around in circles? Midnight Express. We were like, that's how we spent our days, like just going in a circle going, what are you doing in L.A.? And then kids
it's like free air conditioning, too.
That's also true. I mean, it was the middle of the summer in Culver City, California, and no prospects, nothing. And so we started skating again, and that inspired me to do Mighty Ducks, doing that. Like seeing kids come in, like little fucking rink rats would come in, and I was like, oh, I want to write a movie about kids hockey. I used to play kids hockey, and that's how that all started. And so I got into hockey that way, then all those movies, and I got to fulfill every hockey dream in the world, you know, because the Mighty Ducks became a franchise of a hockey team that I named, and then I just took advantage of everything.
Were you upset when they went from Ducks to Mighty Ducks?
No, what do you mean? It was the other way around.
I mean, sorry, when from Mighty Ducks to Ducks?
Yeah,
sorry,
I was somewhat upset. Yeah, I was a little upset because, actually, when they first named it Mighty Ducks, I thought that was stupid, because I was a sports fan first, even though it was my name.
I hated it.
I totally understood. I go, really? That's the Mighty Ducks. I loved it as the franchise and the name, and I had to sue Disney for doing what they did. But when, as a hockey purist and
as a
sports
fan.
What,
you had to sue
them? Yeah.
And you sued Disney.
Okay, yeah,
let's just go through your credits here. You were at Super Bowl XIII, high-selling hot dogs to Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah. who tipped me, which never happened a lot, by the way. I remember he gave me like $2 and it was a dollar for a hot dog, or 75 cents.
Come on, Irish.
A tip
was
a big thing. Yeah.
You know, of course.
Yeah, that was cool.
So what else? Your resume. You played catch with Dan Marino.
Yeah. And played hockey with, you know, everyone you can imagine, faced off against Gretzky.
And you
played, listen to this, fucker.
Disney.
You don't know that. Yeah, I did that, but listen to this. I played in the last game in the Boston Garden in a celebrity hockey match before they tore it down. It just happened to be like the last thing they did in the Boston Garden was a stupid celebrity hockey match with us against.
No way.
Against the old Bruins, like the alumni Bruins, which is a very active organization too, like the Flyers, the Bruins. And so we sat in the Bruins locker room, me and the stupid celebrities. I'm barely a celebrity because of the hockey thing. I was able to suck up to it and become. And I had Bobby Orr come in and give us a speech. In the locker room, he was making fun of it, but he started giving us a speech about how we had to go out there and fucking kick ass and everything. And he got into it. Everyone was drunk as shit. And we went out and played against the Bruins alumni.
Oh, you told me that everyone was dying laughing, like Bobby Orr was hilarious. Saying, we got to win this period.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It was the best. And I had a shootout against Reggie Lemelin at center ice. The place was packed, too. Boston Garden. And I scored, and I swear Reggie was trying. He stacked the pads on me. I went, okay, so that was it. That was my favorite experience of all my. Yeah, put that on the resume.
Jesus Christ.
There you go. Yeah, I could win an Academy Award. Well, not likely, but if I did, I
like a lot of
these
memories.
Dude,
you have like a Forrest Gump like slash Make-A-Wish life, dude. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun to be able to do those things. Yeah, that's the best part. Yeah.
Jesus, Steve.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go from here.
Well,
I don't
have to go anywhere.
I think that
go to the theater or go home and watch Walk of Shame.
I think that's absolutely brilliant. I hope more movies do that.
Yeah, they are.
Although I still love going to the movie theater. I'm a sentimental jackass, so
yeah.
It'll upset me because eventually, you know, I mean, I don't know where
that's... Oh.
Yeah, eventually, you know, that's going to be the way it's going to be done.
What?
Movies? I think that's like saying that everybody thought like the LP, the vinyl was going to go away.
Yeah.
There'll be people, there'll always be hipsters and people like that and sentimental fools like me that will still want to go to the movies.
Yes.
And then bitch about people talking and all that type of stuff.
But, movie theaters are evolving and will evolve into, cooler experience. They just will, the seats and everything.
Well, for younger people, I mean, it was a great place to take when you didn't have a license.
Yeah.
To take a girl and be alone with her.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It was fucking awesome.
Or the balconies they had.
You can't watch it now, you know, at your parents' house.
No.
What am I basically saying? It's very hard to go to third base at your sister's house. sister's house. Jesus Christ. At your girlfriend's house.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to go to third base in movie theaters, too.
Well, but we can't end on that.
No, okay.
Jesus
answer that.
Christ. That's somebody complaining. All right. Anyways. Listen, dude, I had such a good time, whether I'm in it or not.
You're totally in it.
Whether you cut me out or not.
Fucking hilarious.
Whether you were metaphorically saying, you know, you're talking about your grandmother, but actually talking about me, that I was cut out. I still had an awesome time, and I got to, you know, got to meet some great people. I still, every once in a while, I'll reach out to Ethan Suplee.
Oh, you gotta.
He's fucking hilarious. So
all your stuff's in there.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But whatever.
You yelling at the kid. Nothing funnier than Bill Burr yelling at a kid, shut the fuck up. Yeah. The best.
You know what? Right there, that's probably the biggest selling point to my listeners.
Yeah.
Dude, so great to see you again.
Great.
Let's eventually take the women out here and we'll go to dinner at some point.
All right.
That is the bonus episode of the Monday Morning Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And please check out Walk of Shame Friday, May 2nd at the theaters. Or you can download it on iTunes.
Yeah, everywhere.
Right? That's it. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.